join in as we discuss the top state and national political news stories of the week in this edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with two guests from different perspectives on a variety of issues, including a bill to allow concealed carry in state college buildings, a proposal to overhaul the Government Accountability Board, and this week's first Democratic presidential debate. What state or national political issue do you want our guests to discuss? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Ruth Conniff is the editor of the Progressive Magazine. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning.
And Rick Essenberg is the president and general counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty and a blogger at sharkandshepherd.blogspot.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you, Rick, for helping us out on short notice. Margaret Farrell was originally scheduled to be on the air today, but she came down with a bad cough yesterday, and we asked you, and you graciously agreed to do this on short notice. So thank you very much.
Well, no problem. I feel a little like Scott Tolzien coming in for Aaron Rodgers.
Well, let's begin by talking about a busy week in the state legislature. Yesterday, a Republican bill that would dismantle the Government Accountability Board cleared a committee, setting up a full vote in the Assembly on Wednesday. It was going to be Tuesday, but Robin Voss agreed to push it back a day after Democrats complained about the fast track. Well, Rick Essenberg, what do you think? What do you think of this bill? Is it time to bust up the GAB?
Well, you know, the idea behind the GAB was the noble one. The idea was that we could have these retired judges and they would be neutral and we'd get the partisanship out of the administration of elections and campaign finance law. You know, the problem, though, is, as with any proposal, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And what we've had here is really one of the most serious and disturbing assaults on freedom of political participation in this state and its history in this John Doe investigation, where you had the GAB complicit and prosecutors pursuing a theory that was unlikely to succeed for multiple reasons, and doing it in an extraordinarily aggressive way that was really designed to strike fear in the hearts of, you know, political activists across the state. I think when you let that kind of thing happen, people are going to start to question whether the experiment has worked or not. And I think part of the problem is that, you know, you may get less partisanship when you have retired judges, but you also lose something. The judges become staff captive, and you have a different set of problems. And so, you know, maybe it makes sense to go back to the old election commission, which was balanced. That would be a recognition that you can't really drive partisanship out of the process. And so what you have to do is make it explicit, balance both sides against the other, and you won't have these kind of problems.
So, Ruth Conniff, I suspect you disagree.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a good piece in the paper this morning where Peter Barca talks about how the era of clean government is over in Wisconsin, and this bill is one of several that are coming up this next week that really dismantle what has been a tradition of clean government with oversight of elections, with access to voting for citizens, and with this nonpartisan elections board, which the Walker administration has been hotly after because the Walker administration itself has been investigated. And in fact, six of Walker's closest aides and associates have been charged, you know, with breaking the law. And there, we have strict campaign finance laws, or we had in Wisconsin, and that's been a problem for the Walker administration. So this idea that we should take a nonpartisan appointed group of judges and replace them with a partisan board is clearly not a move towards clean government. It's a move towards corruption, and it comes along with a package of bills that are going to turn our state more. Our state is looking more and more like New Jersey. You know, my dad is from New Jersey, and he used to say that when he moved to Wisconsin, he thought it looked like New Jersey looked at the turn of the last century. But the politics were so clean, it was sort of stunning to him. And now you see this evolution of our state. We've got these several bills coming up. We're going to exempt political crimes from John Doe investigations. We're going to reshape campaign finance laws to make it harder to tell who's giving money and increase the amount of money people can pour into political races. And we're going to dismantle the Government Accountability Board. So, you know, it's going to be a big week of getting a dirtier government in Wisconsin.
A clean government is over in Wisconsin, Rick Essenberg?
I think that's an exaggeration. I mean, first of all, to say that, you know, six of Scott Walker's associates were convicted, I mean, they weren't convicted for the most part of anything that had to do with campaign finance, and there's no evidence that he had anything to do with any of it. You know, the problem is that the most serious aspect, the most serious example of unclean government was the investigation itself. I mean, you had a situation where, you know, prosecutors used tactics to investigate people for speech, for political speech, that are unheard of, pre-dawn raids, all in pursuit of a theory which was unlikely ever to succeed, and accompanied by a gag order when the people who were involved, political activists on one side of the political spectrum, were told that they couldn't say anything to anybody about what was being done to them. That's not clean government. I don't even think you'd see that in New Jersey. And when that type of thing happens, you've got to expect the legislature to respond. I think it would be irresponsible if the legislature didn't examine how something like that was allowed to happen in the United States, much less Wisconsin.
Ruth?
Well, I mean, this has been the very overheated description of the John Doe by right-wing bloggers for the entire length of the process. And, you know, that's why the Wall Street Journal has weighed in. That's why we're likely to see a U.S. Supreme Court case coming out of Wisconsin on this issue of coordination. You know, there are forces that want to say money equals speech, and we ought to have absolutely no limits both on people pouring money into elections, which means the people with the most money get the most political power. That's one arm. And then the other arm is the coordination issue, which Rick is right, was the issue at the heart of the John Doe. Not money, but whether or not Walker's staff in his office when he was Milwaukee County exec could use their time, taxpayers were paying them for, to run a political campaign, and whether they could coordinate with outside groups, which Wisconsin law specifically forbids. So, you know, this is a takeover of our politics by moneyed interests, is the short answer. And, you know, dismantling this nonpartisan group, and by the way, the people who were investigating the John Doe and the prosecutors, largely Republicans. So this idea that it was a partisan witch hunt has been, you know, talked about, but is disprovable. And the idea that, you know, this is this grotesque violation of people's rights, well, you know, we have a larger issue going on here in Wisconsin, which is that we're going to do away with oversight of elections, and we're going to do away with transparency for voters. And at the same time, we're making it harder and harder for ordinary citizens to vote. So the net result of these bills, which are going to come up fast and furious next week, is we're going to further collapse the average citizen's ability to vote, and we're going to further open the door to unregulated and untraceable money pouring into our elections. And there are people who really want to see that happen for self-interested reasons.
Let me take a call from Willem.
And I think it's important to note.
And Rick, hold on a second. Let me bring in a caller from Colfax. Willem in Colfax, go ahead.
Hello. I think the issue that I find personally troubling and insulting, frankly, is this notion that somehow we're supposed to trust the Walker administration when Walker has a long history of lying to the public about his intentions and his plans. He has a long political history of enjoying nothing more than punishing his perceived political enemies, and that's what this is all about. It's just, you know, secret redistricting, changes to our environmental, gutting our environmental laws, taking the state parks off of the tax rolls, I mean, on and on and on. I moved to Wisconsin because it had a reputation for clean government and respect for the environment, and all that has been dismantled. And
Can I get you to the Government Accountability Board?
I think that it's widely agreed by lots of people around the country. There's been many articles written about the Government Accountability Board, this idea of a nonpartisan oversight of our elections. I think that's a good idea. I think to politicize it is a bad idea, because we're going to end up with, you know, like the Daley administration in Chicago. This is what this is all about. It's a doorway to corruption, and I'm really worried about that, because...
All right, Willem, thank you very much. So it's a doorway to corruption, Willem, a long list of things that concern him. Rick Essenberg, your response to that.
Yeah, you know, it's not right-wing bloggers who describe the Doe investigation in this way. It's every court that has passed upon the propriety of the investigation. Every court that has considered whether or not the prosecutor's theory was valid or not has decided that it wasn't. And so, you know, you can say that it's a nonpartisan board, and in theory it was structured to be that way. And it may be that the judges who sit on the board aren't attempting to be neutral, but the problem is that when you have retired judges, they're retired for a reason, they become captive to whatever the staff wants to do. And in evaluating how the board has operated, I don't think it makes sense. I don't think you can say, well, in theory, this would be great to have a nonpartisan board. You have to look at what's actually happened. And this investigation, in which one half, but only one half, of the political spectrum was subjected to years and years of, you know, what can only be described as a proctological examination at the instigation of a Democratic district attorney in Milwaukee County, notwithstanding the fact that they, you know, they got an independent person to be a front, that should be disturbing. And quite frankly, it should be disturbing to folks on the left, because you've got to understand, if that becomes the new normal for politics in the state of Wisconsin, Republicans and conservatives will do it too. That's the way things work. And so it really shocks me that, you know, people who purport to be civil libertarians haven't been more concerned about what happened. This was really an awful, awful thing. And we should, you know, maybe we can find a way to reform the Government Accountability Board, but we should see what we need to do to make sure that something like this, which was at best an egregious exercise of judgment and disregard for constitutional principles, doesn't happen again.
Let's take a call from Randy in Kewaskum. Hi, Randy.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I mean, you had your one guest before try to say that John Doe was run by Republican, which is ludicrous. Now, the problem is you've got the GAP is in Dane County in Madison. Staffers there, if they come from Dane County, they're going to be hyper-partisan, because that county is nothing but hyper-partisan. So to say the GAP is nonpartisan is to say an aardvark lives on the moon.
So, Ruth.
Well, the GAP is made up of a group of retired judges, and they're not all from Dane County. You know, it is nonpartisan. And, you know, as far as the John Doe investigation, it was Special Prosecutor Francis Schmitz, a Republican who voted for Walker, who objected most strenuously to this description of it as a political witch hunt. I mean, he's a rock-ribbed Republican, and, it, you know, he was the lead investigator in the John Doe. So, you know, it's silly. And it's, and anyway, it's a smokescreen to talk about this. You know, people want to focus on this idea that this was this terrible violation of these individual people's rights who are being investigated, because there's no way to defend the full agenda of what the Republican legislature is out to do here. They want to replace a bunch of retired judges in a nonpartisan board that oversees elections with a partisan board, which they will control, in the same way that they have managed to redistrict our state so that a state that goes Democratic in statewide elections and presidential years is now overwhelmingly represented by Republicans because they drew the districts that way. And at the same time, they're going to increase campaign donations. They're going to decrease transparency. You don't know who people work for anymore when they donate, if the Republicans get their way next week, which means you don't understand where the money is really coming from, because it's very typical to bundle contributions from a particular industry or workplace. And then you're going to continue to constrict people's ability to vote. Older people in nursing homes, poor people who count on somebody coming to their door to help them register, that's going to be eliminated. You know, the weekend voting is already over in Wisconsin. The whole package adds up to a consolidation of power for one side. And it was foolish of the Democrats to not go to nonpartisan redistricting when they had the power to do that, absolutely. But what we're seeing now is just this total overrun of any kind of check on the people who've got a lock on power and the people who finance them in our state.
Let's talk more about the campaign finance law changes. We'll talk more when we come back from break about that bill that would allow concealed carry inside university buildings. And we will welcome your input on the news story of the week that most interests you at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine along with Ruth Conniff and Rick Essenberg. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the top stories in state and national politics with two guests from different perspectives, talking with Rick Essenberg, President and General Counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, and Ruth Conniff, who is an editor of the Progressive magazine. And we welcome your questions. We welcome your input on the news of the week at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Another Republican bill that's on the fast track would rewrite Wisconsin's campaign finance laws. We touched on this in our first segment. It would allow coordination between candidates and issue advocacy groups and doubling donation limits. Democrats objected. Representative Fred Kessler even pounded his fist on the table after Republicans said that they would hold a vote just minutes after handing out an amendment that rewrote 165 sections of the bill. Republicans accused Democrats of grandstanding. The Assembly will vote on this on Wednesday as well. Ruth Conniff, what will these new rules, assuming they pass, mean for state campaigns?
It will mean that, you know, corporations could put more money into elections, and that, you know, here's where the Walker administration has been working on two tracks simultaneously. They have argued strenuously, as Rick just did, that there's nothing illegal about this kind of coordination, and then they have scurried to change the law to make sure that there isn't anything illegal about this kind of coordination. So they're trying to get done, you know, they're trying to make sure that their past practices that they have been in trouble for, because they are illegal under Wisconsin law, are legal going forward. And the net result is just a lot more money pouring into our elections and a lot less transparency.
Rick.
The legislature has no choice but to rewrite the campaign finance law because large swaths of it have been declared unconstitutional. I mean, I got two provisions invalidated last year alone. The problem is that if you look at the law now, the linchpin, right, the definition of political participation on which it turns has been sort of declared unconstitutional and limited, not by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, but by the Seventh Circuit. So the legislature has to clean that up. So, you know, they're not rushing to make legal what something that was once illegal. You know, they're attempting to clarify the law so citizens in the state of Wisconsin will know what they can and they cannot do. And with respect to coordination with issue advocacy groups, you know, we always hear, you know, this argument that the government, right, politicians should somehow restrict who can say what about issues during an election. I mean, I find that a very disturbing proposition in a country in which we're supposed to have democracy and we're supposed to have freedom of speech. And so it seems to me that to adequately define both the conduct of speech that can be considered coordinated and the conduct that constitutes coordination, that's good government. That's telling people what they can and they cannot do. And although I don't think that this bill is perfect, I think that there probably is some room for improvement. Something's got to be done, and I think that the legislature is making an honest and And I think largely good attempt to do so.
Let's move on to another issue. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is throwing his support behind a bill that would allow concealed carry permit holders to bring guns into state college buildings. Right now, people can carry on campus grounds only. Democrats countered with their own bill that would prohibit firearms on campuses. So, Rick Essenberg, which side has the right idea here?
You know, I think the whole thing is largely symbolic. I used to be more in favor of gun control laws, but one of the things that sort of surprised me is, you know, usually, studies on any important policy question go both ways, but when it comes to concealed carry, they really don't. It's pretty unanimous in showing that concealed carry actually doesn't lead to any type of increase in gun crime, and in fact, the debate is whether or not it actually reduces gun crime. So I don't think that it would be this horrible thing if people were allowed to engage in concealed carry on college campuses. On the other hand, I don't know that it necessarily is some type of silver bullet that would sort of reduce the or eliminate or allow people to respond to the incidents like some of the tragic incidents like we saw in Oregon. So, my inclination is probably to let the people that are closest to the situation and running the campuses make the decision.
Ruth?
Well, that's exactly what's not going to happen here. I mean, the University of Wisconsin is really clear that this sounds like a nightmare. The university police on campus here in Madison do not want to be going into bars on campus and dealing with drunken college students who are carrying concealed guns. I mean, it's insane. And I think it's clear that people have lost their minds who are pushing this bill. I mean, we just saw this tragic shooting in Oregon. And as a parent, like, to think about my daughter, who's now a freshman in high school, going off to college, and the idea that, first of all, these school shootings continue in this country. We've just come to live with the idea that we're going to have these periodic massacres of people in schools, and now we're going to arm students? I mean, it's so obvious that things that happen that escalate, like bar fights in college campuses, and you can talk to any police officer who's had to patrol the UW campus here about this. Things escalate very quickly, and people do things that they did not intend to do that they regret later. When you're holding a gun, there's no going back.
Let's take a call from Don in Oshkosh. Hi, Don.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Two quick points. One is an analogy, and that's about the boy on the playground who throws a rock at another boy. The teacher sees the problem, she gives a rock to the second boy, and then she gives a rock to every kid on the playground. Makes no sense at all. Secondly, if this bill had any sense at all, it would suggest that also guns would be allowed in the Capitol, in the chamber, and everywhere where the governor goes. If it makes things safer, then they should be allowed there. I'll take my comments off the line.
All right, thanks, Don. If I'm not mistaken, guns, concealed carry guns are allowed in the state capitol, but maybe not in the lawmakers can decide whether they're allowed in their offices or not. But maybe I'm wrong on that. Rick Essenberg, do you know?
I don't know. I would just say that, you can argue, you can say that, concealed carry leads to additional gun crime, but the evidence says you're wrong. We've had a long experiment with it now in many, many states, and it simply doesn't happen.
I just think that is not a credible argument in a country that sees Sandy Hook, that sees Umpqua Community College. Hey, we should give everybody guns. Nothing. What could go wrong? People don't believe this, and I really think that
It's true.
By the way, you can carry a concealed weapon into the Capitol. What the Republicans are trying to do now is make it illegal to put up a sign that says you can't carry your weapon into my store or my daycare center or my legislative office. And the Republican staffers who are fans of this thing make a big deal about not stepping into an office that has a "don't carry your gun in here" sign on it. So we've already gotten to that point in this state thanks to the Walker administration, but now we're trying to go a step further and force guns down people's throats. Tell parents who are sending their kids to schools, we're going to make sure every kid is armed. And the caller's right. everybody knows, who has any common sense, how ridiculous that is as an argument. We want each individual to carry guns to defend themselves individually. We want to live in the Wild West. We want to disempower police. You know, no. You don't want the classmates of my kids to be carrying deadly weapons in case there's a shooting.
Yeah, so Rick Esberg, when you were saying leave it up to the campuses, are you saying the legislature should stay out of this?
Yeah, you know, I don't think you have to pass a bill about everything. You know, look, you can make emotional appeals, and you can have your opinions, but you don't get to have your own set of facts. And the facts in this are very, very clear. The only debate about concealed carry is not whether it increases gun violence and victimization, but whether it reduces it. That's where the debate between the experts is. And so, you know, all of these incidents, Sandy Hook and the situation in Oregon, you know, no politically feasible gun law, nothing really short of confiscation would have prevented those things. And confiscation, it seems to me, is simply not something that's going to happen. You know, in a country where you have, in a country where you have 200 to 300 million guns, you're not going to, you know, get to a situation where nobody but the law enforcement authorities have a gun. And while I wouldn't necessarily suggest that college campuses are a place where there's a strong need for people to be armed, there are, unfortunately, places in the United States where it's unlikely that law enforcement can protect you. And if I lived in one of those places, I think I would want to have a concealed carry permit, and I think I would want to carry a gun for my own safety. And I think to suggest that that's crazy, that that's insane, that, you know, people who have that desire are somehow misguided, I think beggars reality.
Yeah, let Ruth respond. You said you're not talking confiscation. Ruth, I'm sorry, you're on now.
It's just, it's sophistry to say that some unnamed evidence shows that more access to guns means either less gun violence or no change at all. I mean, we're running a giant national experiment on this. There are countries in this world where people are not routinely killed in kindergarten classrooms. It is not an acceptable state of affairs, and yet the gun lobby proponents argue there's absolutely nothing that can be done, and we just need to have more and more and more access to guns so that individuals can take defense upon themselves. And most people don't want to live that way. So, you know, it's just not credible to most Americans to say the more guns we pump into your community, including kids should be carrying guns, the safer you'll be. People are scared. They may want to defend themselves in certain situations. The Badger game is not one of them.
John in Somerset is with us. Hi, John.
Hi. Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, I think if they had armed teachers out in Oregon, that those people wouldn't have been shot, you know. And I just feel like all these gun fields are easy targets for these mentally ill people.
All right, so the teachers should have been armed, or the room should not have been a gun-free zone. Ruth?
I mean, you know, I don't know that we're making a lot of progress with these kinds of arguments, but what I would say is that, like most parents sending their kids to school, I don't want my child's life to be in the hands of a teacher who's carrying a gun, a lunch lady who's carrying a gun, a bus driver who's carrying a gun. I want to see less ability of a mentally ill person to get a military-style assault weapon. That is the way to solve this problem. Less access. You know, it's insane how easy it is to get a gun in this country, and not for hunting, you know, not even small arms. We're talking about heavy automatic weapons, and we can do something about this, and I actually think we're getting to a point where we are going to do something about it.
Well, I'd like Ruth to explain to me how you can buy a heavy automatic weapon in the United States.
Go to a gun show.
You actually can't.
Look at the shooters in Colorado.
It's illegal, Ruth, it's illegal. You can't sell automatic weapons in the United States.
It is so easy. I mean, we've seen story after story now. In fact, we have one on our website.
None of them involved automatic weapons.
weapons.
About getting around these loopholes and the willingness of the people who sell the weapons to collude in that. I mean, it's just, you know, to say this isn't happening is just counterfactual.
Let's talk a little bit about how gun control was also a topic at the Democratic presidential debate on Tuesday night. Hillary Clinton and Martin O'Malley accused Bernie Sanders of being soft on the issue. Ruth Conniff, which candidate has the better approach to guns in your opinion?
Well, I absolutely think that the best approach is more restriction. But I understand what Bernie Sanders is saying. What he's saying is, I live in Vermont, which is a lot like Wisconsin, and you can't say to people what I'm saying right now on the radio in Wisconsin and get a good response from hunters and people who feel that it's an infringement on their rights to take away their guns. So let's try to break the issue down, and let's talk about what we can and can't do. And the other candidates jumped on him because, I believe, public opinion has moved on this, and we finally see Democrats who are willing to take a really strong gun control position.
And what's so wrong, Rick Essenberg, with background checks and shutting down that gun show loophole?
Well, nothing's wrong with background checks, and I think that the gun show loophole is misnamed. It's not a loophole for gun shows, as I understand it. It's a loophole for private sellers. So if you're a licensed dealer and you go to a gun show, you still have to run a background check. But if I want to sell a gun to my neighbor, I don't have to run a background check. And so what it is really a loophole, if you will, for private sales. And, you know, I'd be willing to think about whether there is some way that you could put together a system of background checks that, you know, people could readily access in order to, you know, engage in those private transactions. There's nothing wrong with that. On the other hand, I think that, you know, to suggest that if we did that, that somehow these mass shootings would be eliminated is simply wrong, because in virtually none of them would a background check have prevented what happened. There's nothing wrong with it, but I don't think that it's somehow to suggest that, you know, this is going to solve the problem of gun violence, I think, is just inaccurate.
Coming up, we're going to talk about whether we have had enough of Hillary Clinton's darn emails, as Bernie Sanders put it during the Democratic presidential debate, as well as talk about whether Joe Biden is going to get into this presidential race. That's coming up as our Week in Review continues with Ruth Conniff and Rick Essenberg. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about the top stories in state and national politics during our Week in Review with two guests from different perspectives, and welcoming your input too at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let's take a listen to Bernie Sanders when he was asked about Hillary Clinton's emails.
Let me say something that may not be great politics, but I think the secretary is right. And that is that the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Thank you. Me too. Me too.
So, Ruth Conniff, are we sick of hearing about those damn emails?
Yeah, and I think that that was sort of the highlight that was pulled out of the debate, which was interesting, because for one thing, it showed how different the Democratic debate was from the Republican debates, and that nobody is insulting anybody personally, nobody is bashing immigrants. There was, in general, just a higher tone and a sense of civility and a sense that we might actually be able to have substantive conversations and get somewhere in our politics. So I think that's part of the reason that that was such a big moment. And the other reason is that it's moving away from that ugly politics of personal attack that is not only sort of a relief as a viewer, but it also is moving us toward talking about what Americans actually care about, which is not these endless investigations on Benghazi. It is not the constant haranguing of Hillary on the email issue, but it's really what people themselves about. It's the economy. It's everything that Bernie Sanders talks about. It's looming college debt. It's the collapse of the middle class. It's how do we have a country that is the wealthiest country on earth that is a reasonable place to live for everybody instead of an increasingly stratified and unequal society. And people were really happy to see that refocus on issues that matter to them.
Yeah. So Rick Essenberg, was Bernie Sanders right?
You know, it amazes me that, you know, people here in Wisconsin on the left were apoplectic because a handful of staffers in Scott Walker's administration had a private email system to conduct not government business, but political business, which they were perfectly free to do. It was legal. And yet, they tell us that there's nothing to see here. When the Secretary of State sets up a private email system to conduct government business, on which classified information starts to fly around the country, and we're not supposed to care about this. This isn't supposed to reflect on the judgment of Hillary Clinton, someone who apparently, for either matters of personal convenience or because she didn't want her emails to be subject to scrutiny, you know, did something which was probably illegal and certainly irresponsible. I think that that matters when somebody is asking to become president of the United States. And I understand why Bernie Sanders did what he did. He's got to play to the crowd that he's appealing to. But I don't think that the rest of the country is going to buy it.
Let me take a call from Josh in Wausau. Hi, Josh.
Hello. Yes, I just wanted to make a comment. I think the American people still need some answers referencing these emails. We can't just sweep it under the rug and put it behind us. Hillary was quoted saying that nothing she emailed had any classified material in it, and there was no threat to the national security. But yet, when they did the investigation, why is it that they pulled 40-something emails away that's not going to be public records, and they upgraded that information as classified?
Well, they're classified after that. But, Ruth, what about that?
I think the problem that the Republicans face is that they have lost all credibility. So if, in fact, there's a bad practice here, which is a completely reasonable idea, even though Colin Powell also used a private email operating system, so let's just, you know, make sure that we're clear about what the scale of newness of this practice is, even if there's something there, the Republicans have completely burned up any public trust that they might have by coming out and saying, as Kevin McCarthy did before he collapsed in the disaster that is the race for House Speaker, this was an explicitly partisan drive. Now, he was talking about Benghazi, but bragging on Fox News that he was aggressively trying to take down Hillary's poll numbers, and that was the reason for that endless investigation. That's the kind of thing that destroys any prospect of a real discussion of what good government is, what best practices are, whether somebody violated that. So that's the difference between the nonpartisan GAB and its investigations, its oversight of elections and ethics in Wisconsin, and the, you know, the smearing of that board and of Kevin Kennedy, as he put it, in this McCarthyite way. That is a completely different animal from these congressional investigations that go on and on and on in this obsessive hunt to show that Hillary Clinton is somehow corrupt. And the problem with it is people are so weary of it. It's been going on for so long. It's so clearly politically motivated. And at the national level, it is a way of not talking about people's real problems. And people have real problems in this country that they want to address. So they've had it. They don't want to hear it anymore. Unless you're a hardcore partisan, unless you're addicted to Fox News, it's just, it's ridiculous. It actually reminds me of the Monica Lewinsky, that whole investigation. I was in D.C. at the time, and people were so excited. I had friends who were journalists who were actually appointed to special sections just to cover that grand jury, to cover whether or not there was a blue dress. And I would fly back to Wisconsin, and people couldn't care less. So the partisans and the people who were in that mix, you know, really felt like something big was going on here, and they were like sharks, and they couldn't let it go. And out in the rest of America, people had their own concerns, and that's what's happening here. People have gotten just, in Washington, the Republicans have gotten carried away, and they've said a couple of things that make that very publicly clear. And I think that's why this stuff is not working for them.
Let me take a call from Tim in Eau Claire. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I'm wondering if our guests could comment on the fact that CNN and many other news outlets said that Hillary Clinton won the debate, yet the polls on CNN's own website that they've since taken down and a lot of other polls show that Bernie Sanders won the debate by a landslide.
Ruth, what about that?
Well, I thought that that was really interesting, too. And honestly, I did think that Hillary Clinton won the debate, maybe influenced by all the applause lines she hit, which maybe was unfair because the makeup of the audience may have been supporting her. She's really good at what she does. She's been doing this a long time, and she seemed very poised. She seemed to have a greater depth of knowledge than the other candidates when she talked about issues. She effectively turned back what looked like weaknesses for her. But I think what happened is that people were introduced to Bernie Sanders. And I know Bernie Sanders, and I have covered him for a long time. So when he was giving essentially his stump speech on inequality, I was very familiar with that. I think of a lot of Americans are not. And that was their first view of this guy who is out there talking exactly about what they're concerned about and what a lot of politicians avoid, which is that, you know, we have massive inequality and massive economic insecurity in this country, and we need to do something about it. And also, he has the courage of his conviction. So the effort to say, well, you're a socialist, so, you know, clearly you have no credibility. Sanders, unlike a lot of Democrats, is willing to say, what's wrong with that? And then people sort of scramble, because living like democratic socialists countries of Northern Europe doesn't actually sound that bad to most Americans. You know, if you're not in the tank with this very particular view that rejects labels like that, and you begin to actually talk about it, you think, oh my God, you know, this is a completely new way of looking at politics. And I think that that's very exciting to people.
And Rick Esseberg, any thoughts as to who impressed the most in the Democratic debate?
Well, and I know, you know, it seemed to me that it really, with the exception of Jim Webb, who really probably should have been in the other debate, it really seemed to me like a competition among the people on the stage to promise whatever they could promise without any regard to what it would cost or what the unintended consequences of it would be. And, you know, Ruth may be right that the United States, for the first time in its long history, is prepared to embrace European-style socialism, but I don't think so. Our history tells us otherwise, and the success we've had as a country tells us otherwise. But, you know, as far as these polls go, you know, I think that when you have these debates, they tend to be watched mostly by partisans on either side, right, and the people who sort of are most firmly committed to the core principles of the party. And so whoever seems to have most aggressively struck a tone in favor of those principles is probably going to be the one who wins the debate. And so if the Democratic debate is, you know, watched by the Democratic base, if they think that Bernie Sanders has outlefted Hillary Clinton, then they're going to like him, and so he wins the debate among those who watched it. But that doesn't mean that he would win the debate if the audience was a wider and more general audience.
CNN is reporting that Vice President Joe Biden made a series of calls this week to Democratic strategists in three early states, asking a final round of questions about how, not whether, to get into the 2016 race. A top Democrat close to Biden says his family is totally on board. CNN says a decision could come in the next 3 days. Ruth, what do you think? Do you want to see Biden jump in? Do you think he will?
I don't know. I mean, and I don't know if he knows. I think that the debate, if anything, probably set back his plans because, in fact, the candidates, the two top candidates, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, looked really strong. And I think that was a lot of what happened with that debate and maybe why CNN judged Hillary Clinton the winner, because she's been looking really weak. And that's why Joe Biden's been considering getting in. And she delivered a really strong performance. And so, you know, that weakens the case for Joe Biden. Yes, I would welcome him in the race, certainly. I mean, I think it would be healthy to have more candidates, but I don't see him as really presenting a big alternative to Hillary. I see them as being pretty close on the issues. And I think what's really interesting, I think the core thing that happened in that debate that's really interesting is you had Hillary Clinton saying, basically making the case, I'm the most electable. And this is, you know, go with the safe bet. Go with the person who can win. I have the experience, and I know what I'm doing. And then you have Bernie Sanders talking not about himself as an individual, but saying, asked, how would you get anything done, saying it's going to take millions of people actually really pushing for massive change. And, you know, our country is at a very strange point in its politics. You know, we have this Republican Party that has gone so far to the right that they can't get their caucus together in the House of Representatives. We have this massive wealth inequality that completely undermines our idea of ourselves as a society defined by opportunity and democracy. And it's a time when people are really thinking about change, and that's why you see somebody like Bernie Sanders in the position that he's in. So I think that's fascinating, and I think the Biden, you know, in or out Biden is actually more about traditional Democratic Party politics and less about this idea, which is exciting, but, you know, legitimately daunting, that people could actually transform our politics by taking some responsibility as citizens and really pushing for change. It's a very different message.
And I'm sorry, I got to very, very briefly, Rick, because we have less than 30 seconds. Do you want a quick comment on Biden possibly getting in?
I think it may be less likely because if Hillary did well, then Biden doesn't get in because he only gets in if she seems to be in trouble.
It's time for our Week in Review quiz. A public hearing was held on Wednesday of this week on a bill that would expand hunters' wardrobes in Wisconsin. In addition to the familiar blaze orange, what color would hunters be allowed to wear? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. If you know, give us a call. If you are correct, we will send you a WPR magnet. So, in addition to blaze orange, what color would Wisconsin hunters be allowed to wear? 1-800-642-1234. Evelyn and Nina, what do you think?
Pink.
Close enough. It is blaze pink. The idea is being proposed by two representatives, Democrat Nick Milroy from Superior and Republican Joel Clayfish of Oconomowoc. They told the Assembly's Natural Resources Committee that blaze pink is just as safe as blaze orange. In fact, a UW researcher testified that blaze pink is actually more visible than with the orange fall landscape. Republican state representative, though, said the only purpose of this bill is to make a fashion statement. I don't know if either of you have an opinion on this bill. Ruth Connick, do you care at what hunters wear, blaze pink, blaze orange?
It's really totally okay with me if hunters wear pink. I don't see a problem there.
Rick?
Just as long as they're not, you know, mistaken for the, you know, a blaze pink coyote or something
there.
I think it's absolutely fine.
Thanks to both of you for being with us. Rick Essenberg is a president and general counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, and Ruth Conniff is the editor of the Progressive magazine. Thanks to both of them for being with us on this edition of the Week in Review. Coming up on Monday on our State Capitol Report, we are going to talk more about the bill that would allow people to carry concealed weapons into campus buildings on the University of Wisconsin campuses. That is our State Capitol Report on Monday from 7 until 8. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Elizabeth Deliquest for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Also, Monday at this time, we'll be talking with a founding leader of the International Forgiveness Institute about how we can become more tolerant and compassionate in our everyday lives. We'll talk about forgiving Monday at this time. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.